and the meditations of each and every heart be acceptable unto you, O God, our Creator and Redeemer. Amen. Well, our Epiphany journey has been a long one this year. Think way back, if you will, to when this season began. Christmas had just passed. That was like 3 years ago now. And with the Epiphany star, the Magi glowing brightly, we gathered at the banks of the Jordan River. There, Jesus, fully grown, met his cousin John, was baptized, and the voice of God was heard for the first time in generations. This is my son, the beloved. It was a powerful moment that placed Jesus on a path, one that would end up changing not only the direction of his life, but the course of history. Today, we are given a bookend to that riverside moment, though this time we are on top of a mountain. Instead of John, we have Elijah and Moses, as well as three terrified and typically confused disciples. The light breaks forth as it did before, but instead of a star bursting into the sky to guide the wise ones to a child, this time the glory comes from Jesus himself. A guiding light, nevertheless. God speaks this time, too. This is my son, the beloved, God repeats, but a footnote is added, which I love. Listen to him, God says. It really is a lovely, not to mention delightfully tidy way to wrap up this Epiphany time. We start with light. We end with light. We start and end with blessing. It's perfect. But the Transfiguration isn't so much an ending to Epiphany as it is a turning towards Lent, a bending away from the light towards the shadows. As its name suggests, Transfiguration is a moment of change, and the Jesus who goes up that mountain isn't the same one who comes back down. Such is the way with mountaintop experiences, I suppose. For better or for worse, we aren't the same after them. When we come face to face with God, the ground shifts beneath our feet. Things change, whether we like it or not. Peter seems to sense this, seems to understand instantly that once they leave the mountain, things won't be the same as they were before. And so he does everything in his power to keep them there. Let's not go back, he says. It's good for us to be here. We can just stay here. I'm good with my hands. I'll build you a house. Heck, I'll build a house for Moses and Elijah too, if they want. We can just stay here. In the light. Where it's safe. I like it here, Jesus. I like you being here. Let's just stay here. We can't blame Peter for his deep desire to stay on that mountain. Just prior to this moment, in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus has predicted his own death. And Peter, for all his faults and oddities and over-enthusiasm, loves Jesus more than anybody. He is the one who is the first to proclaim that Jesus is the Messiah. He doesn't want that to change. And death, well, changes that. Messiahs aren't supposed to die. And so he begs to stay on the mountain. Given the choice, wouldn't we want that too? Stay where God is close, and Jesus is alive, and things make sense. Don't we all want to stop things from changing now and then? Keep our kids small, our parents healthy, our friends close, our church full, our bodies strong, our minds clear. It is hard, unsettling, when all of that starts to change. Richard Rohr wrote, "Worship of Jesus is rather harmless and risk-free. Actually following Jesus changes everything." And so into the middle of Peter's desperate attempt to stay on that mountain and worship Jesus, God enters. The command to listen interrupts his desperate pleas. And Peter is called to follow Jesus instead. Consequently, the road before him changes and the journey back down the mountain into the shadows begins. Over the next few weeks, Peter and his friends will see that the Jesus they had come to know and trust has changed. His focus will be deeper, his thoughts more distant, his emotions closer to the surface. Healings will continue. Parables will flow from him as if he's running out of time to share them all. Bread will be broken and wine tasted. But tables will be turned in anger as well. His authority will be questioned. He will lament over Jerusalem and weep. And he will offer up desperate and lonely prayers in a dark garden. He won't be the same. For he, more than anyone else, will now understand what the future holds for him. He knows what being the Messiah really means. He knows change is coming. Ruddy Hamilton, one of my favorite liturgists, wrote a beautiful piece from Peter's perspective. It's called Transfiguration Farewell. Farewell, my friend, the one who broke bread and poured wine and laughed with us as you drew pictures in the sand. Farewell, my friend, the one familiar in the conversations we had and the stories you told of seeds and sanctuary, of prodigals, coins, and sheep. Farewell, my friend, who gathered us on beaches at dawn and broke the news to us that you weren't who we thought you were, but that you thought you were Messiah. Doorway of love. Here on this mountain, my love will never end, but you are no longer the friend on the beach or the companion on the way or the one at table, tears rolling down your face with laughter and hope. Up close like this, close enough to see the glory, I do not recognize you as you were. Now I have to look back down the boughs. We have come through together in this transfigured light. It is also different now. The day starts again with memories reshaping in this moment and this new knowledge. Farewell, my friend. My love will never end. May it hold us yet. For everything changes now. Peter, of course, doesn't have the luxury of knowing the end of the story. Whatever insight he has offered that day on the top of the mountain will fade as he watches his teacher face the cross, and anger and confusion, grief and guilt grow within him like an illness. The road ahead is challenging, and he won't understand what's happening as he clings to his belief that messiahs don't die. But we do know the end of the story. And standing this day, the wilderness of Lent spanning before us, somehow simultaneously welcoming and unnerving, we are reminded that everything changes. We're prairie people, after all. We know that. And change is bound to happen when we open our eyes, our hearts, and our minds to what God is calling us to see. As Wayne Dyer said, change the way you look at things, and the things you look at change. As much as we'd like to remain in the peace and comfort of our Epiphany star, it too must fade for a while. The mess and beauty of real life needs our attention and our energy. But we know this light of God will burst forth again. We know that nothing can contain it. And today I find myself wondering how many times Peter's mind would go back to that moment on the mountain. As the years pass and his faith ultimately deepens, I wonder at which point he came to accept the fact that they couldn't stay there. That things had to change. That they had to face the darkness and the uncertainty and look at Jesus in a different way. But that Peter was right about one thing. Messiahs don't die.